This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Today on Keeping the Faith, our guest in the studio is Lynn Warfel, a farmer from Tolono who is also a poet and the author of a brand new book of poetry that came out just last year in 2012 called Song of the Prairie. Welcome, Lynn.
Thank you, Steve.
But before we get to you and get to your poetry, I want to remind listeners what a long and distinguished tradition there is for poet farmers. I'd like to read just a couple lines from a 16th century English farmer poet named Thomas Tusser, T-U-S-S-E-R. He wrote a book called 500 Points of Good Husbandry, of Good Farming, giving advice to other farmers of his day in rhyme. And I'll just read one example or two. Here's one. Though cat, a good mouser, doth dwell in a house, yet ever in dairy have trap for a mouse. Take heed how thou layest the bane for the rats, the poison for the rats, for poisoning servant thyself or thy brats. So he's giving very practical advice here. I don't know
yes,
if that still carries forward, whether it's bad to have a cat in a dairy barn or not.
We have to. And typically, when I was little, we had cats lined up against the wall when we were doing the milking. And occasionally we would squirt over towards the cats, and of course it would get on their fur and they would be licking off. But they all lined up just like school, waiting for a squirt.
So I wonder why Thomas Tusser thought it was a bad thing to have cats in a dairy barn. Were they likely to harm the cows, associating them with the good-tasting milk?
No, my guess is he just didn't like cats.
I see. Well, 500 years ago, 500 points for farming. Some of the things that Tusser wrote, though, have lasted and are considered still quite wise for our time. For example, a fool and his money are soon parted. Seek home for rest, for home is best. Sweet April showers do spring May flowers. And one for the Christmas season that's now past, but at Christmas play and make good cheer, for Christmas comes but once a year. Thomas Tusser.
Very good.
Well, in that tradition, tell us, first of all, let's talk a little bit about your farm. You farm near Tolono, and it's land that your family has farmed for how long?
Since 1882. My great-grandfather came over from Germany, worked at a sawmill in the area that is now the Loop, downtown Chicago, saved his money, rode the Illinois Central down to Tolono, walked out to our farm area, and bought the raw land in 1882.
How much did he pay?
I have no idea, actually.
Wouldn't that be interesting to find?
But it was pretty low cost, although dollars were very precious back then.
Sure. 1882. And so how many generations have been there?
He farmed it his whole career. Then my grandfather farmed it when he retired. My father only farmed it briefly because my father was called into the Army in World War II and didn't come back. So there was a gap between the time my grandfather passed away and I began to farm, although it was farmed by a cousin those interim years.
And so how old were you when your father was killed in World War II?
2.5. I don't remember him at all. He left the United States in the early spring, made it through the Normandy invasion at June 6th. Lasted until August 3rd. He was killed in action near Saint-Lô, France. He was a captain in the infantry.
Oh. And how many children did he have when he went into the service?
Two. I have a sister who was born slightly before I was, and then me.
Oh. My father was in the Navy in World War II, And he came back, but it was a difficult time. I was born just after he left, and his wife, was taking care of me. I was the first of four boys, and I didn't see my father. He didn't see me until I was two and a half, and my mother took a troop train Illinois to California. He was stationed in Alaska with the Navy, and she took a troop train to California to see him when he did finally get a break and was able to come back to the lower, to the States at that time. Interesting time. Well, we'll talk more about your farming life, but let's hear a poem. Let's start right off with something you've written from your new 2012 book, Song of the Prairie.
Well, one of the basic things about agriculture is the soil, and so I keep very close contact with the soil. When I got up this morning, the soil was black, luxurious, and soaking up the rain in a beautiful fashion. So the first poem I'd like to share is called Beautiful Mud, and it starts like this. Some folks can't see it the way I do. In truth, to me, mud is beautiful. It's black as coal, the soil around here, the product of being kissed by ages passing. Late winter and springtime, the rains soak it through. Yes, it is mud. That's true. Wonderful, glorious, incredible mud. That is today, only today. Tomorrow, gentle breezes and springtime sun will caress with care, and the mellow, soft earth will become a garden, aching for seeds to prove its stuff. The drab winter clothing will be trumped by color, first green, grass and leaves contesting to be the first palette, then purples and whites and reds and on and on. Ah, beautiful mud, let it be, and have patience. You and I will see what it can do in its time. In his time, God makes all things beautiful in his time. Lord, please show me every day, as you're teaching me your way, that you do just what you say in your time.
A poem by Lynn Warfel, read by the poet, and from his new book, Song of the Prairie. Lynn, your Christian faith shows several times in this collection of poetry. Were you raised in a Christian church? What was your religious tradition, your background?
I grew up in the Presbyterian Church, where my father was an elder, and I became an elder. Faith is just part of living in agriculture, being out in the out-of-doors and seeing the clouds, living with the weather, the dynamics of thunderstorms and rain, drought and gentle rains and temperature swings. And actually, if you study plants, you study animals, you start to see design, and creation just grows and grows all over.
Now, this poem ends in a prayer. I don't remember reading any poems in this book that sort of end with raising your fist in anger to the heavens at why there's now a tornado, or why there's now a drought, or why there's now a flood. How do you avoid that, since your livelihood depends upon weather?
I know I'm not in charge. It's my job is to respond, to work with whatever nature presents. And so I haven't written one in anger.
Okay, but now you've switched from talking about God, that you're thankful for good things, to nature, that when things are bad. Is that fair?
Well, God is so expansive, and God is over nature. It's supreme. And so I can't bring God down to just nature.
Okay. Is there freedom in nature? Has God made nature free? Or is God making horrible things happen when they happen? We just had a horrible storm in New England.
We are so small and so insignificant on this planet. Sometimes I think God just sends us a message about how small we are and how little control we actually have, whether it's a thunderstorm or a snowstorm or the wind. We're very small, and with all of the knowledge we have, we're still pretty insignificant.
I think it's interesting in the long religious poetry tradition that there is, that the ancient Jewish poets that got collected in the Psalms, many of them ascribed to David, and many of them probably came from King David so many millennia ago. All the emotions are there. You know, they really express delight, but also express sometimes anger. What church do you go to presently?
My wife and I have been attending church on West Kirby for the last 8 years. It's Stratford Park Bible Chapel.
Stratford Park.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in Champaign, Illinois.
Correct. West Champaign.
So you drive from Toledo to Champaign for church.
It's 8 miles up our road right in front of our house, and it's about 9 minutes. So it's not a very long drive.
And as a trustee for Parkland College, for how many years now?
22 years and counting.
And how many miles does it take you to get from your farm in Toledo to Parkland?
It's 14.6, and it depends on how big a hurry I'm in.
Have you become acquainted with state troopers along the route?
Knock on wood, not yet.
When you talked about mud, the poem you chose to read was fairly positive, but let me read a little bit from a later poem in your book, Song of the Prairie. I'll just read a portion of this. When you were driving one of your huge machines, and you say, stuck. We say, stuck in the mud. Not a happy time. A giant machine, some 15 tons, 25 by 30 by 12, on giant wheels, 6 feet tall, purring along so smoothly, but then slowing, finally stopping, sinking deeper, hit reverse, back it out, hope, won't go backward either, think, ponder, do something quickly, sitting is not an option, forward again, give her the gun, just get a little farther to solid ground, back and forth, maybe sinking deeper, mud is flying from the wheels, argh. I guess that's how you pronounce A-R-G-H. Thinking about chains, long ones, or a cable 100 feet, what to hook it on to help. Oh, the ruts, poor soil, to be so ripped asunder. So,
exciting adventure.
Was that a misjudgment on your part to be in the field when it's so muddy, or are there parts of fields that are muddy and you can't tell because the wind has dried out the top of it or something?
I've been farming the same fields for a long time, so I pretty much know the characteristics of the soil in every part of every field. But sometimes what happens is I'm trying to get every ear from the field. And to get those last ears, I push a little bit farther and a little bit farther. It doesn't always work, although early in my farming career, our combines, our harvesters, had much smaller wheels. The engines were not nearly as powerful. And so we actually did get stuck quite a bit. In more recent years, my machines have had much larger wheels. And so even though I almost get stuck, I have not been stuck now for a number of years.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. Back when you did get stuck and those machines were still so heavy, what other machine do you use to pull it out?
The biggest tractor that I could find. Actually, in 1941, the day of Pearl Harbor, my dad and my grandpa were trying to harvest soybeans, and they were getting their combine stuck. They had a tractor in the field with the combine. well, one tractor pulling the combine, one tractor pulling the tractor that was pulling the combine, and they were getting both tractors stuck off and on and having to go get a neighbor to help them out of the mud.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Lynn Warfel, L-I-N, that's short for Lyndon, or L-A Warfel, which is the way his name appears on the title of his book, Poetry by L.A. Warfel, Song of the Prairie. It's available at the News Gazette in Champaign, Illinois, or at Amazon.com. We'll be getting back to Lynn in just a moment, but let me give the phone numbers for folks who are listening to this show who might like to ask our guest farmer poet a question today. In Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, 217 is the area code, and the number to punch in is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. If you're listening long distance, it's 800-222-9455 to get a toll-free number right here to the studio. The phone will be answered by Kyle Crow, our good technical director, and she'll put you in line to talk live on the air with our guest today. We're always eager to have listeners ask questions, make comments about our topic. Well, let's get back to you, Lynn. Do you have another poem for us?
I do. The weather here is certainly changeable. And back in March of 2011, I wrote one about winter waning. Not giving up easily, winter on the prairie moans and groans. The winds speak, winter's dying. A threshold background wind spiced with gusts lashing against our house, causing it to talk back, creaking, a shingle somewhere fluttering. Big drops of rain, heavy with ice, pepper the windows with noise, and then a calm. Is it over? Another gust, another, and another, and another. Small lakes appear. Waterways fill and add their sounds, water rushing, gurgling, swirling. Energy abounds with all this going on. Old man winter won't give up just yet. But the grass is greening, buds are swelling. Lambs are in the pasture. Awkward calves bounce about. Calls to mama come and go. So we know once again, winter is losing. Spring is coming. Just you wait.
A poem from Song of the Prairie, read by the author L.A. Warfel, Lynn Warfel. Lynn, another weather poem that I marked to say something about was the one you have about snow in this book. And you call it Whiteout. And you wrote it back in February of 2008. Now, we haven't had much snow here in this region, but, of course, programs on WILL are heard all over the world through the Internet, live, and also archived. Our archive could be accessed from anywhere, anytime. And so there may well be people who are listening in the Northeast who are digging out their cars and their homes and from the huge snowstorm. So I thought I'd read a sentence or two from a line or two from Whiteout. A great white curtain has been pulled o'er the farm. Nothing afar can be seen, just white and more white. We are likely attuned to thinking, not seeing, in full and complete darkness. But nature has her way today. We can't see in whiteness. And then later in this same poem you say, we are prone to draw lines, divide the days, the years into neat little segments. Nature has ways to cover the lines, turn our whole world white, then melt the white away. Hopefully our whiteouts are in people, where from time to time the world disappears except for special ones, a spouse, a child, a loved one so precious, the world goes away. But just like the snow, those moments melt to be remembered, savored, as long as we live. Your poems talk not only about nature and weather, but about family and loved ones and people. In the introduction to your book, Song of the Prairie, you mentioned that your older son once confessed to his English teacher, "My dad writes poetry to my mom." And you say, "I was merely following the advice given by our pastor during our pre-marriage counseling 50 years ago to appreciate each other." Then you say, "Thank you, Kay, for providing an environment that nourishes a creative spirit." How many other creative spirits have you and Kay nourished? How many children do you have?
We have 5 children and 6 grandchildren, and all of them are a delight and a joy and a blessing.
We'll get back to that in just a minute, but it's time for us to hear an announcement about something coming up tomorrow here on WILL AM 580.
20 years ago this month, President Clinton signed the Family and Medical Leave Act. It was designed to provide unpaid leave if an employee had a baby or there was a serious illness in the family. But workers' rights groups argue 2 decades later, many employees still face difficult choices between family and the job. I'm Craig Cohen. On Monday's Focus, we explore the challenges of maintaining a good work-life balance. We'll welcome your thoughts as we examine the unspoken politics of time at work and at home. On Focus, Monday morning at 10 on WILL AM.
That's tomorrow with Craig Cohen, but we're back now live on Keeping the Faith with Lynn Warfel, our poet. We're talking with today about life on a Midwestern farm. We just mentioned family and your children, and we started off the program by talking about how long your family had been on this farm, but I know from something you told an Ollie class recently that none of your 5 children want to be farmers. Why is that?
Our kids were at a vulnerable age, impressionable age, in the early 1980s, and that was probably the second Great Depression in agriculture in the United States. Interest rates went sky high. The value of our corn and soybeans went very low. Yields were not that great. Our government and its wisdom imposed an embargo and caused even more disruption in prices. So it was a pretty miserable time to be a farmer. There were suicides in Iowa and divorces, and some of our kids were exposed to their friends' families falling apart here in central Illinois as a result of the financial stress. One of the things about being a farmer is that's really who I am. No matter what shirt I'm wearing, I'm still a farmer. And actually, some kids know me as Farmer Warfel. They think farmer is my first name. So farming is not something I can take off and put on. It's a big chunk of who I am. And our kids picked up on that and decided they didn't really want to work hard for 20 years and then start over. And basically, that's what many of us had to do in farming back in the 80s.
Did you have to sell some of your land in order to keep going with what you had left?
I didn't sell any land, but we stopped buying anything new and most things used even. There were no new clothes for school. Our vacations were visiting family and friends. So our lifestyle changed very dramatically for about 3 or 4 years, and our kids picked up on that.
And that was the time of, for example, Farm Aid here at the University of Illinois.
That's right.
Stadium.
That's right.
Memorial Stadium.
Yes. And basically, we lived off our savings for 3 years. It was a very challenging time, and I got some gray hairs during that time period.
Sure. Did you write poems during those years?
Oh, yes.
Do you have one in this book?
I do not. I was asked to pick about 50 or 60 poems for this book, and I think I've got somewhere between 900 and 1,000 books saved
poems.
One place or another. Yeah. Not books, poems.
Poems. How many poems, you say, about 50 in this? I didn't count them.
Yes.
Okay.
And that was the publisher's wish.
So these were the ones you picked, and what kind
Correct.
Of standard were you using as you chose from those 1,000 poems that you've written over the years?
I tried to reflect different parts of my life. Religion is a very important part of my life. My faith as a Christian is very important to everything I do. Family, of course, is very important and stays that way. And then working with the soil, working with nature, being a part of the dynamics of agriculture and growing things are all areas that I wanted to bring out.
Okay. When we were talking about being on this program, we mentioned just before the program began that you'd recently had a visit to Monsanto, and of course there's a lot of very controversial things going on in farming these days with genetically modified seeds and so forth. Do you see that as a good thing? Do you see that as a blessing? Is this another part of the green, or is this part of the green revolution? Or are there dangers here that people should be aware of?
I suppose there's dangers in everything on Earth, whether it's driving your car or getting out of bed. So being a farmer, I look at risks and try to weigh risks. I probably began as a skeptic about genetically modified crops, but I don't like using chemicals. So it's a choice between using chemicals and using genetically modified crops. So I do my homework. I spend about my first 2 hours of the day usually is on my computer. There's excellent sources, some of them from the University of Illinois, a site called FarmDoc, where I can access up-to-the-minute information. Different companies, seed companies, chemical companies also have websites that I use to monitor what's going on to stay up to date. It's the kind of stuff probably if I were a grad student I would be getting here at the university. But in agriculture now, we're heavy users of computers for information. So I spent a fair amount of time continuing my education. And although I was a skeptic at the beginning, I've become very strongly in favor of our using the genetically modified crops and the possibilities for extremely important advances in medicine with people is there with the same genetic searches.
Let me give the phone numbers again for people who'd like to join this conversation. 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana area. That's 217 area code. If you're outside of that code, there's a toll-free number you may use, 800-222-9455.
I'm on a committee for Monsanto, their foundation called the Monsanto Fund. Our charge is to judge grant requests from rural school districts for programs dealing with math and science, engineering, technology. So as a result of that, I've been able to get to know some of the top people at Monsanto. For example, the fellow who invented Roundup. I've had three different occasions where I've been able to visit with him. And basically what my fellow farmers and I go for in these meetings is we want to know the value system and the heart of these top individuals in the company. They've been very impressive with their attitudes and values.
Now, that particular product you mentioned is a herbicide that destroys all the weeds but allows the plant that's been the crop to grow.
That has a particular gene,
right?
So that plant will continue to grow, and virtually everything else that's green dies. Of course, the earth being earth, the earth modifies and adapts, and so we know we can only use something like that for so long, and we'll need something else new. So, as a result of my relationship there, I've been in St. Louis several times now. And last week was able to do a tour of the Monsanto laboratories on the west side of St. Louis and visit with some of the scientists working there. It was very impressive. Probably one of the most staggering mornings of my life because of the kinds of things they are doing in research. Literally hundreds of laboratories doing research. But it's extremely carefully controlled, and In the old days, we developed different strains of plants and animals by kind of throwing things up against the wall and then seeing what we got. In this case, they're able to study a single cell, the genes in a single cell, and do things to try to experiment to see if they can do something to make this plant better. It's just really amazing.
One of your poems in Song of the Prairie, and again, it's available on Amazon.com online, or for people in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois area, they can go directly to the News Gazette office, who's the publisher of this book by Lynn Warfel. One of your poems following up on this theme is Drip, Drip.
Yes.
And you have a line in there that I marked, several lines. You say, "Some morning, strong hands will turn on the keys, engines will roar, and wheels will be moving, brushing, currying the earth, shaping the rows for seeds of fine promise. Through the field, turn, move to the next one. From early light to, dark, 30 or more, the planting will happen." Dag Hammarskjöld, Secretary General, United Nations, said it so well some years ago, the two most important things on earth are planting and harvest. So easy for us in the land of plenty to give that no thought. We just tend to forget all the farming it takes for us to find food in little packages and in stores all around.
Our grocery stores are just phenomenal. The quantity, the quality, the variety of foods in our grocery stores is just amazing. If you travel around the world, that's one of the things you'll notice right away, just how blessed we are in America with our food. And actually, the United States is the only country that exports large quantities of food every year. Other countries kind of come in and go out depending on their political situations and harvests. But here in the United States, we export large quantities every year.
What was your education before you started farming full-time?
I spent 2 years at Wabash College over in Crawfordsville studying liberal arts. And great school, really enjoyed that place and the people and the professors. It's a small school, so I got to know the professors well. But when I was a sophomore, I was sitting at my desk and had received the hometown newspaper, and the teacher salaries were listed in the paper. And all of a sudden, I realized how modest those salaries were. And for the first time, really, I looked back at the farm and started pushing the numbers and looking at the possibilities of making farming my livelihood. And I wound up changing schools, coming here to the University of Illinois and studying agricultural economics. And after a couple of years of that, I started farming.
When you switched from Wabash, a liberal arts college in Indiana, small, intimate, as you say, you knew your professors by name and they knew you on site on that campus of 800. It's still all men, I believe.
It's all men. It might be the only one in the country.
Maybe one other, but not many for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But when you left that sort of an intimate college setting to come to the huge University of Illinois, the College of Agriculture had, what, probably 8,000 students. I don't know. How did you adjust?
with some difficulty. I was a little bit lost, but of course I was a junior by then.
Sure.
And so I was a junior taking some freshman and sophomore classes.
In agriculture.
Yeah. And other things. But it was quite a change. I really enjoyed my classes here at the U of I. And I, of course, I met some really great professors here too. And it didn't take very long for me to start meeting other students and getting to know them. I was in a fraternity in both cases, and I lived in the house here on campus, across the street from your old church, McKinley Foundation Church, and attended church there. But It wasn't very long. I got to know some folks here and made friends here.
And, of course, large universities are known for being having these small groups, whether it's fraternities and sororities or dormitories or within your college, within your department. You do make friends, and you do get to know faculty there and other students.
Especially at the junior-senior level, the classes get smaller and smaller.
Right. Well, the combination of 2 years at a small liberal arts college and then specializing in something that's going to be your life's work, that's not a bad model.
Yes, and there's a lot of kids who change plans about that time.
Uh-huh. That's right. We're talking with Lynn Warfel, L.A. Warfel, author of Song of the Prairie, a new book of poetry about farming life. Here in central Illinois, but of course it fits with Iowa and other places too. If you've missed part of this program and want to get all of it, you may do that. It'll be archived soon at the WILL website. That's will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith, and just leave the G off of keeping, and you'll find all of our past programs there going back a decade or so. Some of the first years we didn't have this system, but we may get those online sometime too, because we had some very interesting interviews those first 3 or 4 years of this program. Several poets, in fact. But the poet we have here today is Lynn Warfel, and let's ask him to read another poem.
Several years ago, I was attending a banquet for farm leaders here in Champaign County. And reflecting about those individuals, I wrote the following piece, March of 2011. It's titled, The Farmers of Champaign County. There are those who, together, move mountains to build a Panama Canal. Others build mountains and do it again and again and again. The farmers of Champaign County build mountains of grain every year. They plant the prairie in tall grass corn, waving fields of soya, and sprinklings of feed grain wheat. These mountains come and go, rising each fall and slipping away during the winter to fill the trains and barges and ships reaching Asia, Africa, Europe. Food, protein for a hungry world. In another way, these farmers fill the trenches. They've done it for our country. The Civil War, World Wars I and II, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq and Afghanistan, they've answered the calls for freedom. Somehow, along with those activities, they've built the schools, the churches, and raised their families serving. Husband and wife, they shoulder the loads helping to turn the world into a better place. Step back with me and look at their places, their homes, their farms, and where they pour out their lives, into the schools as students themselves, then parents and trustees and teachers, into the churches, baptisms and communion members, elders, trustees, deacons, teachers and choir, preachers and missions, into organizations, 4-H and Farm Bureau, Feed Grains Council and more, traveling to Argentina, Brazil, China, coast to coast, Mexico to Canada, you find these people, their products, contributing food, fuel, and fiber. A tip of the fedora, if you please, to the farmers of Champaign County.
Read by Lynn Warfel, president of the Champaign County Farm Bureau, Parkland College trustee for 22 years, and you were on the school board in Unit 7, I believe.
That's correct.
And chair of that school board. How long were you on that school board?
I spent 10 years there.
10 years.
A lot of meetings, okay. A lot of adventures. And a lot of challenges, so it was a real learning experience.
I started this program by quoting from a 500-year-old book by Thomas Tusser in England, who was a farmer poet, and I thought I'd read one more thing about this time in the program. In summer, will save their own seeds against the next year as occasion needs. One of the big controversies right now is with genetically modified seeds that companies forbid farmers from saving. They can't use those to plant their fields the next year. They have to buy new seeds from the company that developed those special seeds. We'll get to that in just a moment, but it's 20 minutes till the hour, and I need to take a quick break and let listeners know this is AM 580, WILL, and also being heard simultaneously at 90.9 FM HD3. Listeners are also listening at www.will.illinois.edu/AM, and our programs can be heard on archive there going back several years. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the host for Keeping the Faith many times, although Professor Don Nolan from Parkland College, who was head of the Religion and Philosophy Department there until his retirement, helps out often. And most recently, we had three programs in a row by a newbie here at Keeping the Faith, Danny Otto, professor from Eastern Illinois University from their philosophy department, who hosted for us. So good to have you listening. Coming up next week here on Keeping the Faith, we'll be hearing from Rebecca Ginsburg, who is director of the Education Justice Project. That project helps prisoners who are in the Danville Correctional Center near the University of Illinois get college credit for courses that they take while they're prisoners, hoping to fight against recidivism and help those prisoners have a way to make a living once they get out of prison. On February 24th, Don Nolan did a wonderful interview with Bishop Demetrius of the Orthodox Christian Church in this area, about the kind of restrictions that are on the Orthodox Patriarch in Turkey by the government. And that interview will be broadcast on February 24. We had to record it when the bishop was here, and I want to thank Don Nolan for taking time out of his busy life. He's still teaching online courses for Parkland for doing that interview. So it was recorded in January. We'll be playing it February 24. Well, getting back to our guest today, what about this quote I did from Thomas Tusser 500 years ago, where it was just expected that farmers would save seeds and then plant them next year? And now a lot of the seeds that are being planted, it's against the law, I guess.
That's an interesting situation, and of course one that farmers discuss over and over. When I first started farming, we did save seed from wheat and soybeans in particular, but not corn. The universities tended to be the major developers of the new seeds, the new varieties. But over time, the university activities declined and commercial companies increased their work in developing new varieties, so that more and more the private companies had a lot of money invested in developing the new varieties. So here at the university, there's been a good relationship, I think, that's transitioned into the commercialization. And research, of course, is a huge issue here at the university. You can call on somebody like President Bob Easter, who was dean of the College of Agriculture before that and was really good in research, but also a farm boy. And so Dr. Easter could see both sides of that issue. And we rely a lot on people like him to try to help us balance what we would like to do and what we need to do. So we understand now the investment that companies like Monsanto and others have in developing new varieties. And so it's really fair for them to protect those varieties for a reasonable length of time. There are expirations on those patents, and so we do move from that to wide open again.
Farmers depend a lot, have depended a lot over the years on radio to get information about what the prices are on grains, what the news is, and what the weather is. And you mentioned radio, and since WIL has a strong history of agriculture news and weather, would you mind reading a poem that I picked called Farm Sounds, where you you mentioned radio, and I thought we just had to get this in on this program, if you don't mind.
Don't mind at all. This one's called Farm Sounds.
Are there any of your poems you don't like?
I can't think of one. they probably just get – I hit the delete key.
Okay.
Or I just erase that one from the window. Farm Sounds from March 2010. Eyes closed, early morning, nature is stirring the farm. A little creak somewhere as breezes nudge the sleeping world. A distant low hum, throaty and steady, of a train cutting through the dark, then a whistle approaching a crossing a couple of miles away. Birds are chatting, flitting from branch to branch. The sun will soon be peeking over the eastern neighbor's trees. Doors opening, closing, a few with squeaks, water running here and there, and then some steps on creaking stairs. Water running, coffee grinding, gurgling, coffee splashing, newspaper pages turning, a clink of a spoon on a bowl. Outer door opening, clunking closed, steps going away on the walk. Wind blowing through the treetops, 20-foot doors sliding, stopping with a clunk, a starter engine grinding. First roar of a giant diesel, anxious to push and pull, lift and carry and do the farmer's bidding. Augers rattling, moving grain, the semi idling, building air. Psh! 100 pounds, release the brakes and roll. Ridden, ridden, shift, purr along the highway. Radio news and weather, markets and commercials, my link to outside worlds. Then pulling on the scales, psh! The brakes are locked. Squeaking, the sampler swings. Squirk! It dips and sucks, the rattle of the kernels through a plastic tube. Kathy waves me on. Pit two, her fingers tell me. I pull down the line. Tim waves me on, then signals stop. He throws the switch to open, and a soft rattle of kernels pouring through a grate. Then silence, a wave, and I'm back on the scales again. Pshoo! Brakes locked, a creaking cab door, and I'm in the scale house. Clunking lightly, the tickets printed. Rip, the margins clean. How's it going, says Kathy. A smile for every fellow. Fine, we say. Sort of like at the doctor, when we should be more honest, maybe pride or private, or maybe simply macho, we smile back and enjoy it. A pretty female gift, that smile. I hope she's paid for that. Back in the cab and rolling back at the bends and noises, around and around we go till quitting time. A favorite time of day, walking to the house. Maybe a pheasant calling. The stars beginning to glitter. Heaven is quietly watching. Swing open the door. Wash up for supper, the welcome call. A lift in her voice that signals, says a lot. Puts love right out there. Wraps its arms around me. Welcome to her home, our home. It's her sounds that matter most.
A poem read by the author, L.A. Warfel, Lynn Warfel, Song of the Prairie, published by the News Gazette newspaper just last year, 2012. Available for sale at the News Gazette office in downtown Champaign or at Amazon.com. Lynn Warfel is our guest today. He read that poem at my request. All those wonderful sound effects I thought were great for radio. Plus, it mentioned radio being the link to the outside world. You also mentioned in that poem about your experience at the grain elevator, and just before you read it, you mentioned something about erasing a poem from the window. The window of what?
Lots of my poems get written with a felt-tip Sharpie on the windows of my cab, whether it's tractor cab, combine cab, truck cab. That's the handy notepad I have most of my day.
And so you can revise it as you go, reread it. How could you be looking to your your poems while you're in a big machine that's harvesting or plowing or planting?
I've been at this for 50 years, so a lot of the jobs are pretty mechanical as far as where I need to be driving and so forth. But also, not on my truck, but my tractors and my combine have a thing called auto steer. But with GPS technology, my tractor knows exactly where it is down to the inch. And once I'm in a field, I establish an AB line, and then my tractor will automatically drive back and forth in a certain width along that line for as long as I want to go.
And so as long as you're going on a straight line, there's auto steer that's being guided by some computer in your
right.
cab and also tied to some satellite somewhere.
Right.
So you can literally take your hands off of the equipment and write a poem.
Correct. Or talk on the phone. Or I can turn around and look backwards and watch my planter, mm-hmm. and the tractor still goes straight as an arrow.
And what happens when you get to the end of the row?
About 100 feet from the end, I get a couple of beeps from the computer, and 10 feet from the end, it starts beeping very rapidly to make sure I'm awake and that I'm going to turn. It's signaling me that I need to turn.
Now, in my research for this show, you know, I do deep research every week.
Okay.
I hear that there are some brand new planters that will even make that turn for by themselves and come back and go to the next space where they should be. But that adds, what, another $100,000 to the cost of the machine?
Not quite that much, okay. But there's actually tractors and implements being used from a control tower with no operator on the machine. Several of the large machinery companies are doing that. Actually, our airplanes pretty much land and take off by computer nowadays. The pilot can override the computer systems, but mostly the computer systems are landing the airplanes.
And so I don't need to be afraid as I'm driving down a country road and I see a big machine approaching the road that it'll safely turn around. It's got
Correct.
Beeps, and it may have a way to turn itself around pretty safely.
Right, and we cannot use those systems on the highway.
Okay.
There's a screen that comes on initially that makes us promise not to try this on the highway.
I see.
And we don't.
We're talking with Lynn Warfel. Again, we're about out of time, so we won't have time for any comments or questions, but we know most listeners are happy just to listen, particularly when we have writers on this program and reading their own poetry or other things. We probably have time for one more poem, Lynn.
Good. This one would be called The Last Row. I wrote it at the end of harvest in 2004 in a field down by Pasotum, where I worked with my stepfather for 10 years. My grandfather had bought that field a long time ago, and it had been in the family for a long time, so I'd been going on that. A sunny afternoon in a very large garden, half mile by half mile, long rows of corn, all passed over and processed by my behemoth harvester, except one. My green and yellow steed, 12 tons and some, sits awaiting command as I pause, consider, reflect. With a sigh, I push the lever forward. Always forward I go, having pushed for days and evenings into O-Dark 30 and dinner at 9, working as the sun comes up, working as the sun goes down, awakening with plans and strategies, dropping off to sleep with unsolved problems. The hum of a giant diesel, the symphony of processing parts, the stalks disappearing down, the ears being hurried into the machine, the spew of material out back, the pouring of clean grain captured, the rain of grain into trucks, the roar as their engines pull, highways and byways and trains all full, moving, pushing too. On the ground, the rabbits hide and then sprint, seeking the last tall shelter, again and again, a pheasant flushed and flying away, and nearby, a coyote trotting along, letting me expose his next meal, and a pair of hawks, too, choosing their prey. And then the end, a harvest complete, a year of tilling, planting, cultivating, drawn to a close, but waiting at the edge of the field, trucks beginning the next cycle, ready to sow plant food, next year's crop. Already beginning. Rest. Not yet. For winter is coming. Much left to do before snowfall will find me settled by the fireplace, reading, thinking, as I pause, consider, reflect on the last row.
The Last Row from Song of the Prairie by Lynn Warfel, read by the author. Thank you, Lynn, for being on the program.
My pleasure, Steve.
Coming up this Tuesday here at the University of Illinois, as part of the Veritas Forum that we talked about last week, will be a program Tuesday night in Lincoln Hall. That's February 12th at 7:30, Lincoln Hall Auditorium on the Quad. A panel discussion. The theme is God and I. Coming up at the University of YMCA's Friday Forum at the University of Illinois this coming Friday, February 15, Inner City Muslim Action Network, fighting for justice for the marginalized in Chicago neighborhoods. That's part of the university-wise forum series, Friday forum series for this year. The program last week with Nuns on the Bus packed Latzer Hall there at the Y. Several hundred people were there to hear that program, and so do go early to the University Y at the corner of Chalmers and Wright Street for those Friday noon programs. You can order lunch by calling 337-1500, or you may take your own bag lunch, or simply go and hear the free lecture and ask questions of the speaker at the end of those programs. Coming up on Keeping the Faith, next week we'll be having as a guest Rebecca Ginsburg. She's the director of the Education Justice Project, which helps provide college-level courses for credit at the Danville Correctional Center, so the prisoners will have a better chance at finding a paying job when they get out and not be sort of forced back into a criminal lifestyle. On February 24th, we have a special treat. The local area Orthodox Christian Bishop Demetrius spoke with Professor Don Nolan from Parkland College about the situation for the Orthodox Patriarch in Turkey. That's coming up February 24 here on Keeping the Faith. I'm Steve Shoemaker. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hello, I'm John Steinbacher, Membership Director at Illinois Public Media. As a regular WILL radio listener, you are no doubt aware that we often use in-program pledge interruptions to request your support. But many of you have asked if we could maybe, please, possibly, sort of, just do this a little bit less. So during our February drive, we are attempting to raise $40,000 trying something a little different. Go to will.illinois.edu/clear the air to learn more.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.